Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Normally, being a little extra can be a bit much. But when it comes to healthcare, it pays to be extra. And UnitedHealthcare makes it easy with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they supplement your primary plan, helping you manage out-of-pocket costs without the usual requirements and restrictions like deductibles and enrollment periods. So when it comes to covering your medical bills, you can feel good about being a little extra. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
Wow!
Nice!
Yeah!
What you're hearing are the sounds of people everywhere putting on Bombas socks, underwear, and T-shirts made from absurdly soft materials that feel like plush clouds. Yeah, that plush. And the best part? For every item you purchase, Bombas donates another to someone facing homelessness.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
You are listening to Missed Apex Podcast. We live F1. Welcome to Missed Apex Podcast. I'm your host, Richard Spannersready. Welcome to this F1 subreddit Q&A. I'm joined, as always, by Matt Trumpets. How's it going, Matt?
I think we're doing pretty good today. I'm kind of excited about this. You know, Reddit is subreddit, and in general, is kind of a big mystery to me. I sort of tried to play with it a little bit, but honestly, it kind of scared me away.
I have been told off for breaking the rules, blatant self-promotion, and just being a bit of an idiot. But here to help us unpack the mire that is the F1 subreddit, we've got a very special guest today, all the way from Brazil. But let me just take the opportunity to tell you that we are an independent Formula One podcast produced in this podcasting shed with the kind permission of our better halves. We aim to bring you race reviews before your Monday morning commute. We might be wrong, but we're first. So to help us unpack the fiery, flaming gates that is the F1 subreddit, we have with us the editor-in-chief of that subreddit's editorial team, Flip Jakobsen. Thank you for joining us in the shed, Flip.
Thank you for having me.
Now, we alluded to the scariness of the F1 subreddit. I think it's more that me and Matt had kind of wandered into it several times a few years back, not quite known the lay of the land, and everyone had gone, "Ah, you're idiots, you're doing it wrong, go away." And we've gone, "Oh, sorry.
Yes, that is unfortunately a very common experience for people that join Reddit because the website, which has millions and millions of people, has developed a certain culture. There are rules, obviously, that Reddit sets, but every little subreddit, it's a little niche. So you have these, you know, evolving cultures within each one. And yes, sometimes you wander in, it's like, "Oh, look, I love this." And then, you know, you get shouted down and thrown out and shown the door. So yeah, that can happen, but you know. It's still a great place.
For those unfamiliar with the Reddit system, basically people will put a post up and that will get upvoted or downvoted, which affects how likely it is to be seen by people. But also the individual comments can get upvoted or downvoted. So the most popular comments rise to the top. And generally mine get like -100 or whatever because I've got it completely wrong. But the self-moderation within the community is fascinating.
It is fascinating. Obviously, as your community grows, we run into a bit of problem, you know, because the upvote and the downvote system, also, it can lead to very relevant things being downvoted if, you know, a certain group of people that do not share that opinion see that first. So there are, a few problems with the upvote and downvote system, which we as moderators get yelled at all the time. But what I always say to people that complain about it is say, look, Reddit itself has been trying to solve this problem of, you know, people being downvoted when it shouldn't forever. So if anyone here has a solution, please bring it up, and Reddit's going to give you, is going to give you a lot of money. But so far, nothing has truly worked.
Well, welcome to anyone who's joining us for the first time from the F1 subreddit and is hearing and seeing Flip's face and voice for the first time as well. Thank you so much for responding with some questions for us to tackle today. Bear in mind, our season review is coming up on Sunday and is live at 8 p.m. UK time over on our Missed Apex YouTube channel. Flip, we'll get onto some more of the stuff that you're doing with that F1 subreddit, because it's really fascinating going forward. How many users do you have?
Currently, we have subscribed users of 1.3 million. Whew. But within Reddit, there are many people that do not subscribe because they'll get maybe have the race results spoiled or anything like that. So it's hard to say how many people are actually active, following us, but subscribed, which are people that are regulars within the subreddit to get notified of posts and things like that, we have 1.3 million.
Well, I bet you're sorry you asked that question, because now we both have subscription envy.
Yeah, I know. Oh, look, we won't get into comparing sizes, Flip. The subreddit is a Goliath, and they have provided some questions for you. But firstly, as well, I'll say welcome, our first South American panelist. We're very proud on Missed Apex podcast of our international panel. We've got panelists from Sweden, Australia, France, Belgium, actually recently with Tony as well, the Netherlands, Denmark, Canada, and America land. But you are our first South American, and you have turned up with what I believe is the Williams of Nigel Mansell behind you.
No.
Oh, you've moved the microphone to reveal a six.
It's the white six of Piquet. Come on.
So in Brazil, right, in the UK, we get accused quite often of being biased towards the British drivers on our show. And I think to a certain extent, there is an element of that. You know, we got much more excited about Lando Norris coming through than we did Daniel Kvyat coming through. For example, I'm imagining in Brazil, you very much get behind your drivers, Piquet, Massa, Senna.
Yes. Whenever I see the complaint about British bias, I chuckle, because the Brazilian bias here is amazing. It's much worse than anything you can imagine. We support the drivers no matter what. It's when you're watching on TV, it's really funny because they will call us like, oh, yes, and Nigel Mansell has won the race. Congratulations to Mansell. Yes, good. But and then when Piquet was ahead or Senna was ahead, it was, you know, you had to mute the TV because it was going to explode your speakers with the screaming and the they play music. There's a little bit of a bias.
Okay, well, in that case, the first question we selected from the post we put up and didn't get downvoted loads, the post, people were nice to us. So
there we go.
this is from... now it's user/ unmesh data 26. Thank you very much for this question. Says Flip, so this is directed to you. Of all the heartbreaks you've had in your life, where does Massa's 2008 heartbreak rank? And given the context of our previous conversation, I'm imagining quite high.
Yeah. It was the worst sporting moment of my life.
Is it too soon to talk about it?
That did not, you know, that didn't involve a serious accident or anything like that. Worse even than my last high school basketball game, we lost because we were ahead. Someone tried a half-court shot, and one guy in my team fouled that person, and we lost the game. But Massa's 2008 championship that wasn't is much much worse.
Now, seeing the passion, obviously, of the Massa family in that moment, we kind of missed that, I think, in the UK at the time, because obviously we were watching and paying probably a little more attention to what Timo Glock was doing, because for us, our driver, that was the next car, and you're going, oh, Glock, he's on the wrong tyres, surely Hamilton's going to get there and catch him. And for us, it was just... ecstatic, but the scenes afterwards were a little odd, because the focus was completely on Massa on the podium and not the new world champion.
Yeah, it was. I was living in the USA at the time, and so I was watching on TV, but it was hard to see thousands and thousands of people explode when Massa crossed the line to win. I was like, oh, he's going to be champion, and then just deflate completely when they saw that Hamilton was there. And seeing Massa on the podium and just... and, you know, obviously I cannot fault Hamilton for it, but if Massa had won that championship, I believe that the motorsport scene here in Brazil would be different. So, you know, it's hard. I do not blame Hamilton, obviously.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's, yeah. But in terms of ranking, it's definitely the worst sporting moment of my life. No doubt.
I was going to jump in and say we could do an entire 3 shows worth of whose fault was it really that Massa didn't win. And I was barely paying attention in 2008. I mean, you had the Alonso thing. There was so much that happened across the season.
Singapore.
Yes, exactly.
Was Singapore, was that with the fuel hose?
Yep. But also with the intentional early pitting of Alonso by no longer in the sport, Flavio Briatore.
And PK Jr., the crash.
Oh, sorry. Right. So where was the deliberate crash? Was that at Singapore?
Yes, it was.
Right. I was thinking of the other incident where Massa still had his fuel line attached and he lost points there as well. So as a Hamilton fan, obviously, I've got to obligatory point out that he lost points in Canada, I think, for handing back the place, but not quite correctly, because that was fantastic. But yeah, what a season. And I wonder if the fates of British motorsport were equally as affected, because in the 12 years since then, although listening to your voice, you would think it was 5 minutes ago, Flip, listening to your voice then, in the UK, we're now really spoiled. There have been times where we wondered if there was going to be an F1 driver at all at various periods, or we had Max Chilton or Anthony Davison at the time, who weren't setting light to the F1 world, but, you know, but were at least British, but it was like, eh. And now we've seemed to have this conveyor belt of British stars. Do you feel like Brazil might have gone down that direction if Massa had been like a megastar?
If he had won that championship, I believe that it would have at least encouraged more drivers to develop, because, you know, we are not a very rich country in the sense that we have that kind of money to burn. So if you have more sponsors, you have more people being supported to move to Europe, because that is still necessary. So there is a little bit of a financial commitment that I believe that if Massa had won, it would be a little bit different. But we'll never know.
No. And I mean, we are facing a period with no Brazilian drivers on the grid. So one question here comes from, AWT Turbo Guy. And he says, my question for you, Flip, is what's your ranking of the Fittipaldi family's F1 drivers from best to worst? Now, you're going to have to list them for me, because me and Joe Sayward got in an awful tiz here, and I was mixing them up with the Franchettis as well. So why don't you put the Fittipaldi lineage out for us? Matt, what's up?
How do you do that?
I don't know.
Kitty.
I'm so sorry.
Just, what, they both start with F? Really?
Pretty much. Help us out, Flip. Help us out in our ignorance.
So the Fittipaldi family started, basically they started the Formula One love in the country. That was them. Wilson is the oldest, son of Wilson Sr. I'll talk about him a little bit later. So Wilson and Emerson were the first ones.
And what years
Emerson?
Are these?
Roughly. This is early 70s. Ah, okay. Emerson started in 1970, unfortunately substituting for Jochen Rindt. So that his success, Emerson's success, basically kickstarted the love of Formula One that we have in the country. So in terms of drivers, there's no question that Emerson is number one. There's no doubt about that. Number two, I would put Christian, who had a pretty unlucky career. I would say he was very good. You can see based on his IMSA results, he was a very good driver, but never quite made it. Third, I would put Wilson. And I think Pietro is still a little bit early in his career to rank him anywhere.
Yeah.
I was never really excited because I never felt like he would get the chance. But I think that his performance substituting for Grosjean, they were both very good. One race I actually watched on board with him. And I kind of have hopes now that he will have a very good career and not just be Will Buxton's, you know, sidekick on post-race shows.
His name Pietro, yes. Is it?
Pietro, yes.
Pietro Fittipaldi. Now, his nationality is US, isn't it?
Yes, was born in Miami.
Right,
yes.
But you guys count him. You're like, no, it's a...
No, well, he races under a Brazilian flag, so yes. We will count him. If he was born on Mars and, you know, that's our guy.
No, that's completely fair. That's completely fair. I think, it doesn't... If Hamilton has Prodigy and they are born wherever, it doesn't matter. We will still claim them, I'm sure. But when we talk about national fandom, did you do that live, watching the onboard? Is that what you did? Oh, my gosh. Right. Okay. Any British people out there, tell me if you've just watched a whole race live from the onboard of a British driver. That is some fan pride there. That's great.
I've been since we formed the editorial team, I've been doing that a lot, watching the race and watching onboard with with selected drivers. We usually ask the rider assigned to lead the team in that race, you know, if he has a specific interest on a driver or anything like that. And I will watch the entire race and make notes about that particular driver, how the race went, communication between the engineers and things like that. But for that race, I obviously went with the Brazilian. Yeah.
Do you think there's any element of him racing under a Brazilian flag because he understands, you know, what it means to the fans in Brazil and the family, or is there a money link? Is there like Brazilian sponsors that would want that?
Albon kind of has that, you know, that discussion going. But I think considering the history of the family in terms of Brazilian motorsports, I think he probably understood that their place in Brazilian the history of Brazilian motorsport is very, very important. And he just, you know, knows that racing with that flag would be a good thing. I was actually surprised at myself when I saw the car with the Brazilian flag at how happy I was to see it again.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. I mean, Matt gets that, don't you? Every time Haas enters shot, you're like, yeah, America.
Yeah, that's exactly what
I do. I've seen it.
No, but it was exciting to have a team, but I think really, you know, because it's long been a thing to convert more Americans to watching the sport. And while the team is nice, I think you're going to need an American driver in the sport to really start capturing the eyeballs. And I think, you know, excitingly, there's a couple of up-and-comers right now whose names are being bandied about. And, you know, after we had Rossi, who really didn't get much of a chance. I think that's what you're going to need. So I can respect and understand where you're coming from, seeing that Brazilian flag back out on the track again. It's nice to have, because the driver is the narrative, not so much the teams, even though they provide a lot of information for us. So to just have a person to root for and not an organization is a big difference.
And isn't it wonderful in Formula One? You know, if you watch if you're a football fan, you tend to be watching, I don't know, you're watching Colchester United versus Cambridge United, for example, which came up earlier in the week. Cambridge fluked it. Colchester United were clearly the better team. But you're generally mixing with people from your own nation and your own culture. In Formula One, and especially now in the rise of the internet that we've all seen come up in our lifetimes, you get to go somewhere like Reddit and you're arguing with a Brazilian or sharing condolences with an Italian and being on a panel between the UK, the US and Brazil. It's one of those few sports where we really are one world, aren't we? Yet we can still go in our little nationalistic pockets.
Yes, we can certainly do that. Although there are so many countries that do not have their own drivers. Yeah. And it's really interesting in our community to see where people lean. You know, we have a influx of Indian fans. And it's interesting to see where they're heading. You know, are they supporting Hamilton? Are they going for a Ferrari? You know, it's really interesting to see how those play out.
Even with the Indian Grand Prix no longer being a thing, because when Formula E dropped the Battersea round, for example, as a British Formula E fan, I suddenly went, oh, so there's no British E Prix. The series kind of lost a little bit of a spark for me. And I wonder if that has happened in places like Malaysia and India, Korea as well.
It appears to have happened, but I think since Liberty took over and their push to, you know, make the sport more accessible and everything that they did with Drive to Survive and everything like that, I think it really, really helped maybe reignite that love that the Indian fans had for Formula One. But we've seen a big increase from that area, the entire area of the world, not just India, but, you know, the whole subcontinent.
Right. Let's get fighty. I think this might end up in a debate. We've got another question from U/Lieutenant Jeffords. And we did touch on this briefly in our Abu Dhabi race review, Matt, but I don't think anyone tuned into the review, because the general consensus was that race sucked and no one liked it. For me, it's still 2 hours where my family will leave me alone. When Dad's watching F1, he gets special privileges. He's allowed to be a little bit grumpy. It's the only 2 hours of the week where they will tolerate me being grumpy and go, no, shut up, turn the volume down, quiet, it's Formula One on. So I enjoy it nevertheless, whether it's a thriller or not. And obviously you growing up in the 80s, Flip, you know, looking at these modern era races, they're all pretty much better than any race in the 80s or 90s.
I think I've always loved Formula One. I watched all the races. I love all of them. But Abu Dhabi is, yeah.
It's got some unique issues, hasn't it?
Yeah, it can get a little bit dry. Mm. This year, I watched on board with Sainz, so that was super fun because I had all that the fight between, you know, the McLarens and Ricardo, so that was really fun. I really enjoyed the race, but I did not watch it again.
No.
From the broadcast, you know, which I usually do.
It's because I think there's a few races this year where if you were flicking through the channels and you caught it, you would go, oh, let's sit and watch that again. Like Portimao, Mugello, probably both of the Bahraini ones as well. But no, you're right. With the Abu Dhabi one, you go, no, I'm good. All I'm saying is we can probably repeat some of the points we made at the Abu Dhabi and then go a little bit deeper. So you, Lieutenant Jeffords, says, oh, that's from Brooklyn 99. Cool. Lately, we've seen quite a lot of car versus driver debate, which only got stronger after Russell's strong showing in Hamilton's car. Is the Mercedes that good that anyone can do what Russell did? Is Russell that good? Or is Bottas just really bad, allowing Russell to shine more easily? I'd like to know what you guys think. Thank you for that question. Firstly, though, what was the subreddit like in response to that? Certainly, Twitter was ultra toxic when George Russell was jumping into Hamilton's car and was, on the face of it, doing very well. Everyone was like, see, Hamilton's garbage now.
So, yes, that is a tricky one for us. Hamilton has, let's say, some people that do not really like him for reasons that we try not to assume what they are, but sometimes they're pretty obvious.
Some of it's that. We can be mature enough to say some of it's that. That doesn't mean that if you dislike Lewis Hamilton, you're just a terrible person. But we can't deny there is some of the community that does that.
Yes. We are trying that subset of anti-Hamilton people we are trying to get rid of. But there are many people that are tired of him and winning, just like when Schumacher was dominating.
So yes, sir.
That's obviously a factor.
He is one here.
That day was not great.
So what do we think? Let's get your hot take then, because you are president for life of the subreddit. No. You are the editor-in-chief of the subreddit's editorial team. What say you then? What did we learn, if anything, from George Russell pumping himself into Lewis Hamilton's car? Does it prove one thing or another?
I did not think so. I think this car driver debate has been going on ever since Formula One started. You look at Fangio's career, he jumped teams all the time searching for the best car, because without the best car, you're not going to win. See, you know, you can be a great driver and still not win. See Alonso at Ferrari, Verstappen at Red Bull right now. You know, they are obviously great drivers and they cannot reach that pinnacle because the car simply would not take them there. If Hamilton had spent the hybrid era in Caterham and Manor and, you know, Alfa Romeo, he's not going to win all the titles that he did.
Yeah.
Doesn't mean that he's a worse driver. It just means that, you know, the car is not going to do it. So I think that debate shouldn't really exist, because it's obvious that you need two parts. Because I think most people forget this. Since 2014, Hamilton has had the best car. Yes. The other guy has done so as well.
Yeah.
So his teammate, Mercedes is a team that prides itself on being equal for both drivers. So, you know, there's something there.
Well, I tell you what, we upset a few people here, because we ran the stats on how the Ferrari would have done in 2017, 2018 without Vettel specific errors. And it really did look, in those seasons where we saw very few errors from Hamilton, it looked like the Ferrari had the capability to go and win those championships, and that the drivers made the difference. Now, people are going to yell at me and say that that's British bias. But one argument I have with Matt, I'm going to reignite an argument from 2017, I think, when it was Sorokin and Stroll in the Williams. And I was saying to you, you know, we can't even say anything about that Williams, because the drivers were so off pace. And this is one of the wonderful things about F1, is you have to tease it out over seasons and seasons. And I was saying to you, oh, well, I think that was a Q2 car. It's just that Sorokin and Stroll weren't getting it there. But it is possible that there are decent teams out there that, for whatever reason, the drivers aren't sparking, and it makes the drivers look equal. But really, it's the fact is they've not stepped up to the car. Matt?
Yeah.
Well, I mean, if we're going back to that specific debate, no way was that a Q2 car, even in the hands of the best driver. Because
I don't agree.
What a driver brings to the car, in terms of the engineer will sit there and calculate all the forces and say, this is the fastest you can drive this car around a lap. And then a driver will get in it and inevitably will not be that fast, because an engineer doesn't have to account for actually being in the car and the feelings transmitted by the car to the driver. Now, the more closely those feelings align with the driver, the closer to that magic 100% time they get. But no driver is so good they could take a car like that unbelievable dog of a Williams and make like a second and a half difference. Because, I mean, we did not rate Stroll that much, but he's not a slow driver. And neither was Sorokin. That car was genuinely, genuinely terrible. And so, to bring it back to the Hamilton thing real quick for you, the thing about Hamilton in that Mercedes is, yes, he's in it, but he is possessed of a consistency over time that is unparalleled. He makes fewer mistakes,
yeah,
and they cost him less across the season and across years. And that is the unbelievable thing about what he has achieved. And that is really where you see the difference with these drivers. It's not 1%. It's not 0.5%. It's like a tenth of a percent difference.
Yeah.
But multiplied across a race, across a season, it's huge.
And now Hamilton has had periods where that has not been true, mainly going wheel to wheel with Massa, actually.
Oh, yeah.
Like 2009, 2011, particularly bad years for Lewis Hamilton, and he seems to have shaken them out of his system. Now, Matt thinks I'm going to let that Williams thing drop. I'm not quite, but I'm going to pose it as a question to you, Flip, so he has no chance to come back. But in that era, what we were sort of wondering was how much the engineers might have had their head down at not having great feedback from the likes of Stroll and Sorokin, and how that might have actually affected their development for those few seasons. Do you guys, in the rest of the world, give Hamilton any credit for developing the Mercedes? You know, he could well be part of why that car is so good. I remember in 2013 him giving very vocal interviews and saying he needed to drive the team in a direction of very, very high downforce.
There was a story very recently, probably last week, about the suspension, the rear suspension of the Mercedes. And one of the points that really stuck out to me, not that Mercedes did something brilliant, because at this point we're kind of used to it, but it was that in everyone that reported that story had a mention of Lewis Hamilton has been pushing for this since blah, blah, blah. The more aggressive slow corner turn in.
Oh.
So it is obvious, and this is not just now, this is from forever. You see Jim Clark and Colin Chapman, that duo, obviously, you know, there's something there with the driver. It's not just Chapman's, you know, realizing what he needs to do. Obviously the driver is doing that. But I don't know. I can't say how much people give credit for Hamilton for saying that, because, you know, there's, like I said, the discussion around him is complex, but I certainly believe that, there's no question that he helps the team. He is a big, big part of what the team became. The same way that we give credit to Schumacher for creating the Ferrari, the juggernaut of the early 2000s, you have to give credit to Rosberg, to Hamilton, and to Bottas for, you know, helping the team be what they are now.
Not credit to Schumacher, blame to Schumacher. We blame Schumacher for. I do have loads of sympathy for people who are hating this Mercedes dominance, which is arguably worse than the early 2000s Ferrari dominance. But that was torture. For me, I just thought, you know, Schumacher and Ferrari were absolutely, they were the big bad. And ever since, it doesn't matter how far Ferrari fall or what they do, or whether they rescue puppies from each track they go to me, Ferrari will always be the big bad dominating force that ruins F1. And I wonder how many people will grow up thinking that of Mercedes F1. You know, they are the Death Star. Whereas to me, Ferrari are the Death Star.
Yeah, I grew up and, you know, watching Formula One in the 80s. Ferrari was, I don't know, probably a sideshow. It's like, oh, look, right. Ferrari. I was like, whatever. McLaren, then Williams, then McLaren again. So I can totally see that happening. You know, people that are coming through, you know, into Formula One now are going to look at Mercedes the same way you looked at the Schumacher Ferrari. It's like, oh, I hate these people because, you know, they basically win too much.
Yeah, no, I know. Right, okay, let's get back to the F1 subreddit questions. And we've got a couple of good ones coming up. And we won't keep you for too long, Flip. But what we will ask, since we like you and you seem polite and you physically your hygiene looks fine, if you would join us on a regular panel during our off-season as well. And it is wonderful having a Brazilian on the podcast because you've just taken us down different paths and different ways of thinking, Matt.
Yeah, but not the quiz show, because I'm already sensing he would clean both our clocks.
I have had words with our quiz master about the questions and the level of questions. I said, Catman, you're making me and Matt, the hosts of the show, look stupid with your questions. Could you just dumb them down? And his answer was, legitimately, Spanners, I had already done that. So instead of doing a live quiz here on the show, what I was thinking of doing was having some kind of webinar with the quiz format where people can join in and actively play and have a little pub quiz. Obviously, there'll be a bit of an honor system and we'll try and rig it so that there's as little time to cheat as possible. But we're going to do something like that instead of just humiliating me and Matt on an annual basis with our New Year's quiz. Flip, I'm just going to go ahead and assume you've said yes, you're going to come and join us on our panel. I can now
say that would be my pleasure, and I'm honored that you would ask that. So, yes.
Happy days. Let's go back to the subreddit, and it's you unseasoned racing. What's your dream fantasy lineup for 2021 teams? Who gets a seat? Now, what is your interpretation of fantasy lineup from this question, Flip?
I actually asked that person, because if there's no rules, what I want is 10 Fangio clones, 10 Clark clones, and they can go at it. So I asked, you know, is this people that have super licenses? Are these current drivers? You know, just to get the lay of the land.
Yeah, what was his response?
He said that, yes, you know, drivers from now with super licenses that could actually race in the following season. So
why don't we broaden it out slightly and say we can have a current driver and we can fudge the super license a little bit. We can say that we can put them in this series and they'll get the super license. Interesting that you went straight for Fangio, though, because would you give Fangio a career where he could start racing at 8 years old, for example, get into a Formula One car at 21 and have, you know, the fitness and the modern training that drivers have? Or are you going to put, like, Fangio didn't start his career till like he was 44 or something like that? Or he was quite old, wasn't he, when he started? Would you put that Fangio into the car?
How long do you have on this show? What's the time limit? Because, you know, if you're asking me that question seriously, I'm going to talk for like 6 hours.
Okay, so, well, let's compromise and say a few minutes.
Fair warning.
Go on, go for it.
I could never answer the question, who is the best driver in Formula One history? I vacillate between Clark and Fangio constantly, 1A, 1B, and they switch. I think both of them would be what they were in any era that you put them in. They were just brilliant. And I think if Formula One was available for him when he was young, you know, it's a long story, but you know, there's trouble before he reaches Europe to race. He would have won even more. So yeah. And obviously if Clark hadn't, unfortunately had his accident at Hockenheim, I think he would have pushed records that were already far away from people. He would just crush everything.
A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. United Healthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
I tend to upset people with this argument because my feeling is that there was just a smaller pool of people competing for those spaces, and now it's a bit more competitive with a bigger pool of people. But actually, at the top level, that pool is shrinking just of late. So I think we're going to see a decline in driver quality going forward at the moment, unless something is done. So I just do believe that statistically, the modern drivers are more likely to have been more skilled than the drivers from that kind of era. But I think for me, if you want to put Fangio in that car for your dream lineup, I am going to insist that he starts younger, that he has the same fitness regime as the modern drivers, and that he's gone through karting and all that kind of stuff and up the same ladder, if you like, with all the access to the same stuff. So that's my only caveat to your fantasy lineup.
All right. So my fantasy lineup with the rules that were set for me, and I have to give a caveat before answering, is this. After this guy retired, PK, I never really love the driver as much. So I want the new, like, I do not want veterans staying in Formula One for 20 years. Like, I want like people to come and go. So my lineup is young, heavy. I would like Ricardo to join Hamilton in Mercedes, because I believe that he can be one of the greats, and I would like to, you know, to see him have the chance. I would like Verstappen to match with Sainz again at Red Bull, even though I know that car is hard. They did changes late in the season have made it a little bit easier to drive. But I would love to see them now that they're a little bit older and more experienced, you know, matched again. I would like Norris to continue at McLaren. And this is a very homer pick. I would like Magnussen to go back to McLaren. I love the Magnussen family, and I would like Kevin to go back, you know, after everything that happened. I would keep Aston as it is. I think Perez and Stroll are fine. For Renault, unfortunately, the driver I wanted is no longer available. So, you know, Alonso and Ocon are fine. I'm kind of interested to see what Ocon can do after his year away. And, you know, he has been getting closer to Ricardo. So I'm kind of excited to see him go against Alonso. Mm. For Ferrari also, the driver that I would love to see there is also sadly no longer available. So I would have loved to see Leclerc and Bianchi together at Ferrari. I think that would be one of the great stories of this era. You know, they growing up together and reaching their dream together.
You might have obviously a far second best to that, but Charles Leclerc's younger brother is going to be lining up in F3 next season. And if you look at Yuki Tsunoda, who got announced for AlphaTauri this year, Tsunoda went from F4 to F3 to F2 to AlphaTauri, all in those steps. So, you know, it's possible. And obviously Max Verstappen just skipped Formula 2 altogether, didn't he? Or GP2 altogether. So you could conceivably have a Leclerc-Leclerc pairing at Ferrari very soon at some point.
That would be fun. But yeah, I'm short of Mika coming back, because I have one of our moderators, hey Yepi, really would like that sabbatical to end at some point. So Leclerc Hakkinen would please me, but you know, that could be good. Gasly Tsunoda is actually one that I'm really excited for to see how that goes.
Well, hang on a second, because we've strayed a little bit away from dream lineups. And the next question is about how we think the team battles are going to shape up next season. So, Matt, do you have a fantasy lineup that you would like to see in F1?
Yeah.
What is it?
But you're not going to like me when I tell you.
I don't like you anyway.
Yes. Well, fair enough. Unlike Flip, I would love to see Verstappen and Hamilton together in a team.
Yeah, really?
Because I think that's like sodium and water, if you ask me.
Yeah.
And the drama would be unrelenting all season long. And in the same car, there would never be the... Now, most people think, oh, that would be Verstappen in at Mercedes. But I say, let's be fair. Hamilton has the most experience. Let's make him go to Red Bull. And the reason is, what I would really love to see, and this is a total fantasy, I would love to see Grosjean and Magnussen in at Mercedes to answer once and for all the question of what would happen if you took a midfield driver and chucked him in the best car on the grid.
I tell you what, why don't we just put Verstappen and Hamilton in the Ferrari? This is our dream lineup. Let's just do that. Neutral ground. Flip.
Yeah, I was going to say that I think for either driver, moving into the other driver's team is going to be hard. Shades of 88, you know, Senna coming into Prost's team. So, yeah, I would go with your idea. Just move them both to Ferrari and let's see.
Matt?
I say let's see how good Hamilton really is. That's what I say. And we could give him an extra season if you want, to be fair. But I think that would be mental. But yes, the two of them in any team would be one fantasy. And then the other one is, and I know I'm weird by wanting to answer car questions by putting in drivers, but honestly, I am a bit of a Magnussen fan. He finished on the podium in his first race ever. People forget that. And he, not just because he was promoted after Red Bull was tossed out for altering their fuel flow meter, but he genuinely finished on that podium in his first race. Not too many people do that.
Not everyone forgets that. I say that every time his name comes up.
You're the one-man band making sure people remember how good he is. Well, yeah, jeg snagger iksomal dansk, K-Mag. Jeg ønsker dig. Okay, we'll leave it with that as well. Maybe he'll have a kid who'll come along as well. We can have the third Magnussen in a row. So, fantasy teams aside, I mean, my fantasy lineup would be a three-car team. So I would always want like a rookie, the main head guy, and then a kind of, you know, your Bottas Webber style driver. Sorry to Bottas and Webber fans. Because I just think that like having a three-car team is much more interesting. You could have bigger grids. I would increase the podium. I don't know why the podium's only ever three, but you could have a five-man podium to get more, so you don't just have an all-Mercedes podium. But I just think that would increase competition. And that's something I've always loved, Matt, which people hate me for. I love the team element of Formula One. So if I was a boss of Formula One, I would always have a number one driver and a number two driver. I would never, ever do what you said of have Verstappen and Hamilton together. It's a nightmare. It's a team game. And I love it when they are able to interact, play wingmen for each other. That, to me, adds a whole nother crinkle of enjoyment and fun.
Oh, yeah. The team element is omnipresent. But the fun thing about Formula One is that your teammate with whom you work most closely is also your first rival on the track. And I think that's why there's always so much to talk about. This is one of the things that really drives Formula One, is there's this sort of unique tension that you don't see. I mean, you see them in the other single-seater series. But aside from that, you don't. In sports cars and stuff like that, you work with the other drivers. You're all in the same car. You have to.
And in a lot of teams, you know, teams that are not restrictive, you actually get to see the telemetry off your teammates. So you know, the guy that you most need to beat, you can look at everything he's doing and try to do it better. I love that aspect as well.
Yeah, that's the only reason Matt is faster than me at iRacing. He looks at my graphs, he looks at my stats. Stop doing that,
yep,
Matt.
That's it.
Stop doing that. Right, okay, last question, because the time's flown by with our new friend Flip. Right, let's go for the question from Lord James BD16, a little bit presumptuous, Lord James. What he's got George Russell after his name. What does that mean when you see a Reddit user and then they've got like George Russell or Mercedes?
That is called a flair. Oh. So you can select that in many subreddits depending on what their topic is. So for ours, we have all the current drivers, we have old drivers, we have teams, current teams, old teams. We have personalities. My flair, for instance, is FIA. But there are people that have Charlie Whiting. There are people that still have the Niki flair, the old one, and also Niki, you know, the red cap of his executive time. So, you know, it's a way to signal your allegiance.
Can you add podcasts to that? So can
I guess we can.
I'll put in my special request while we've got you here. Anyway, Lord James's question is, lots of interesting new pairings next year, and that's why I stopped you a little bit. How do you see the new teammate battles going? How do you see people such as Lando and Charles doing, and how will it affect their future? And this person says, love the show, by the way, Spanner. So they know me. He's heard of me. Hooray. Thank you very much.
And there's a little heart there. So it's like true love. It's not just, you know, oh, I love you. You know, it's like,
it means
true love.
It means something. I'll start this one. The most interesting pair up, I think, for answering questions next year might well be Lando Norris versus Daniel Ricciardo. The Renault team genuinely jumping up and down, just saying Ricciardo's done an amazing job. Sorry, Matt. Matt's an Ocon fan, but Ocon's been shaking off some rust from his year off. I think Lando Norris might have a little bit of a problem on his hands. What do you think, Flip? I think Ricciardo's going to be a handful coming in there and taking him on.
I think Norris is going to have a bad time. Not a bad time in terms of fun, because both of them, they're going to have a ton of fun together.
I'll bet.
But once the visors are down, I think it's going to be tough to repeat what he did this year, beating Sainz in quali and you know, kind of matching Sainz. I believe Ricciardo is going to take that Renault to, take that McLaren to places that it has not gone before.
I think that Norris is still a bit of a flower, and he might just click over to that next level next year. That's what we're hoping for, but you've got to do it. You don't get infinite chances in F1 unless you're a billionaire, which is half the grid now. but so I think Norris, you know, this is next year against Ricciardo is really important to him. He's the incumbent in the team, and Ricciardo is the one coming in. I think he's got to show that he's the quality driver people are hoping he's going to be. But here's what I reckon, Flip. I think Lando is still going to have an outright pace advantage.
Yeah, and I think Norris if he does well against Ricardo, will owe Sainz a debt of gratitude, because I think that his time next to Sainz has really helped him improve in certain qualities that he would take a few years to get there.
Okay, cool. Let's skim through some of the others. I'll go to you, Matt, because I know you are Ocon Fosi. And a big, big challenge. And I tell you what, I reckon Renault are hyped for Alonso. He is a megastar. And Ocon, unfortunately for him, he hasn't got the same pull, that same political pull as Alonso. And as we know, Alonso is a political force. And I got the feeling he's still going to be quick, tough for Ocon as well next year.
Well, interestingly, the biggest problem for Ocon is that Alonso is and was and always has been associated with Renault. He's a big name, and as you point out, he will carry a lot of weight. Interestingly, I think this is going to be the same problem that Norris will face, despite having done a great job this year. Ricardo is an entirely different animal when it comes to reputation and his experience on the grid, and it will carry a lot of weight at McLaren, even if they want both drivers to be treated equally.
I think that Ricardo is legitimately behind the scenes slightly evil as well. He's just not let it fully out yet.
Yeah. I think there's an element of bonhomie that covers up just exactly how his killer instinct behind the scenes. Yeah, I would agree with you.
Yeah, I have a friend who refuses to accept that Ricardo is not evil. He's like, no one is that happy.
Yeah, that's me.
Must be evil.
Yeah, no.
There we go.
I've been pushing that line for ages, and it's going to come out. It's going to come out at some point. Nice, lovable Daniel Ricciardo, just like he farms puppies just so he can jab them with a short stick or something. It's going to be something, Matt.
It is going to be something. But I will go back to Ricciardo's experience moving from Red Bull to Renault. And it did take him about half a season before he really bedded into the team and started to just thoroughly outpoint, was it Hülkenberg at the time, if I'm remembering correctly? And so I see two problems for Alonso, despite all the hype. Problem number one, he's been out of the sport twice as long as Ocon has. That's partially probably offset by his years of experience. But still, if you're not driving around a racetrack at that speed, it's going to take some time to just get to shake the rust off, as you say. And the other is, it is a new team for him. He's going to have to get used to the car. He's going to have to get used to the way the team operates now. And it's going to be more of a challenge because they've had to redo things because of the new technical regulations that are coming in for 21. And let's not forget, Ocon has improved steadily through the season, but when he was with Perez, who I believe you might rate kind of highly, it was pretty much a 50-50 battle, and he was faster in qualifying. So I don't think Ocon will be a pushover.
Hang on. Okay, now you've brought that up again. I'll make the point again. Perez's strengths are not necessarily out and out on a Saturday. However, I think Perez did comfortably outscore him that season. I know you point to the quali battle. Ocon probably is faster out and out.
Yeah, we could bring up the DNFs as well.
Yeah, sure.
We could go back and look at points per race. And in my recollection is it was pretty close considering Ocon was basically a rookie.
Got it. Reasons. So Matt made the point there, Flip, about him coming into essentially a new team. But there's an awful lot of personnel are still there from 2005 who remember him very fondly.
And let's not forget that he took part in the Young Drivers Test.
Yep, of course he did.
That was a little bit strange, but, you know.
From the FIA, that I, as far as I could tell, was that they gave him a caveat because of all the work he's done promoting and helping young drivers, which, as I understand, is true, but that's a stupid reason to give that caveat.
Yeah, I am by profession a lawyer, and I can tell you that that reason came after the decision was made.
I'm sure. Oh, we're running a little low on time here. So I want to make sure to send current Missed Apex listeners over to the F1 subreddit to go and check it out. But in brief, you guys also have a little bit of a plan. And the reason that you even have an editor-in-chief installed as part of the editorial team is that you guys have some exciting plans for producing content. And tell me if I'm wrong for having said that, but are you able to tell us anything about it?
Yes, we decided last year to give our users the chance to talk about Formula One. And it has been really successful. The Fittipaldi, for instance, when Pietro was announced, we ran a fabulous piece on the impact of the family, not written by a Brazilian, but it was great. So we have been doing these things. We covered Le Mans as well with the people from the WEC subreddit. So it's been really nice. The response has been really good. And I think we found many people in our subreddit that can write and can bring a different view of things, from a sport that unfortunately is moving away from long form journalism due to the pressures of the industry. I think there are many people that have said that they kind of missed that, you know, the Mark Hughes Monday article that, it took the whole lunch hour to read because he went through everything. Yeah. And that was kind of the reasoning behind it. And, you know, we're seeing people that we were helping, you know, give them the platform, you know, scored, you know, I'm going to write about this. I was asked to write for X publication. So, you know, it's been really,
People have been able to leap from that as well and move on from it. Well,
that was part of the plan, and it has been happening, which, you know, makes us really, really happy and proud of what they achieved.
So there's been a lot of changes I've noticed looking at that F1 subreddit over the years. And you and I had a long chat, you know, offline. I was saying to you that subreddit with all its users, it does have a massive opportunity to really shape F1 fandom and the tone of F1 fandom. I've gotten upset, in recent years of certain publications just trashing F1 and being really ultra negative. And kind of, I feel I enjoy the race. Then I see all the negativity come up on social media and I go, oh, now I don't feel great about the race anymore. It's ruined it. But those publications have got their clicks and they've got their likes. So it's job done. It's not the individuals. It's a big corporation. Whereas with that F1 subreddit, you guys have got as much influence as a big publication. Yet there's a much more personal drive behind it now to actually create a decent place for people to hang out, and a positive form of F1 fandom may well emerge from it.
That is one of the goals, certainly. Not just to ensure that the discussion around Formula One is a bit more informed, a bit more, not so much, you know, based on the memes, and which are fun, you know, yeah, we all enjoy having a laugh. But when I see, for instance, people saying, I don't know, that the triple headers are, you know, people in Formula One are babies because they're complaining that they have to travel from next year. I believe it's Singapore, Russia, and Japan back to back. I feel like that the fact that people cannot understand why that's hard, it kind of means that they don't know the level of effort that takes that you need for a Formula One to take place. Mm. And so one of the goals is exactly to have, you know, the ability to talk more and to kind of get into all these little details while also trying to have, you know, a less tribal discussion, you know, between I'm a Hamilton fan, I'm a Ferrari fan, and so I hate you, you know.
And have it as more of a friendly thing rather than a you don't support Hamilton, therefore you are scum, that kind of thing. But anyway, exactly. Look, it looks like you guys are doing really great work there. And one of the comments on the post we put up asking for questions was from Hey Flo, Hey Flo. As a female fan, Flip, that's you, was the first mod who made me realize that the sub was actually listening to us and implementing changes to make us feel safe. And that's a wonderful compliment just to you personally that I just wanted to end on, that you're making the subreddit a more inclusive place.
Yes. I'm not sure if I was the first, but, you know, I appreciate the compliment. But I believe that there's no reason for us to close the gate on anyone. We are, even though it's a large niche, we are still a niche sport, and we cannot compete with football or anything like that. And I don't get us turning out fans because, you know, oh, you started following Formula One, you know, only because of Drive to Survive. Excellent.
Oh, yes. You know, there was some gatekeeping over that, isn't it? You're only a Drive to Survive fan.
Exactly.
Therefore, you have less worth in the community. And I'm betting that women feel this in the way they are responded to on all forums in general, but, you know, particularly in F1 that's very male dominated. I don't know what else. I don't know personally how to make women feel more included and safer in those environments. The solution, I guess, is just to listen to what they're saying. And you seem to have done that.
Yeah, exactly. We listened. We asked questions, not just of women, but, you know, various different groups that we felt were being treated unfairly. And I believe that we're not there yet, but we are reaching a place where everyone can feel welcome. And for me, you know, I've been following Formula One since 1981, and never in my life have I said to anyone, it's like, oh, you know, you don't know anything because you started following in 94. It's like, no, excellent. You're a Formula One fan. I'm a Formula One fan. Let's talk, you know, let's discuss this. And, you know, that's what I think communities like this should be.
Even Americans. I think we need to be inclusive to Americans as well.
If you insist,
fine.
Okay. We get them as well.
Last question for you, Flip, before we go. Favorite non-South American driver of all time?
Jim Clark.
Oh, there we go. I thought you were going to struggle for a second there, but you'd already mentioned Jim Clark as well.
That is no question. When I visited Scotland about 2 years ago, we landed in Edinburgh, and the first place we went to, other than the pub, you know, I'm not crazy.
Yeah.
So, but the next place was I went to Jim Clark's house to, you know, pay my respects. And so.
Wonderful. Matt?
Current era then.
What?
Current era. Formula One.
This decade.
Driver.
This decade.
Favorite era?
No. Favorite driver.
In this era, like in the current regulation set, who is your favorite driver that is not South American? Going to make it hard now.
I'm going to... 2008 me is going to hate current me, but it has to be Hamilton.
There we go.
From a Brazilian as well. There we go.
Just a quick story. When we formed the editorial team, we never knew what the response would be, right, from the community. So as the response was good and as Hamilton was reaching Schumacher's record, I decided to write a book chronicling all his wins. And just going over everything that has happened since he started in 2007, you can't, he's just the best driver of this era. And there's no question in my mind of that.
Oh, I didn't realize there was a book. Would you like to plug the book? Is it available?
It is available on the subreddit. I published it there. It's called 92 Wins because, you know, and my greatest accomplishment with this was that I got mentioned in a My Little Pony subreddit, someone recommending my book, and that was basically the best thing that happened this year.
That is absolutely fabulous. Flip Jakobsen, thank you so much for joining us, and thank you to the F1 subreddit for those questions. I hope we'll be able to do this again. Missed Apex Podcast is an outfit that carries on all through the off-season, and actually, we have some of our most enjoyable content during the off-season because we are not... we're not tied to the constant drumbeat of races and news and stuff as well. So I hope you'll come and join us from January. We've got our season review next Sunday. There might be a tech review that is released over Christmas because we team up with Matthew Summerfield from motorsport.com, and him and Matt here do some great tech analysis as well. Then we'll start our off-season content in January. So I hope you go check us out. Follow us at Missed Apex F1. On Twitter, I'm at Spanners Ready. If you want to follow me, Matt is at MattPT55. And if you want to find Flip and his gang, you go to reddit.com/r/Formula One. And that's how you go and find the F1 subreddit. And there we go. If you're tired of Twitter, go give the subreddit a try. Not that you need advertising from me, Flip, I'm sure.
thank you for the opportunity. It's been my pleasure. And, you know, let's head into the off season now.
Yeah, let's do it. Okay, guys, whether you see us for our season review or whether you're going to wait until March to come and find us for the 2021 season, I would urge you to work hard, be kind, and have fun. This was Missed Apex.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
When you drive a vehicle so reliable it's backed by a 10-year, 100,000-mile limited warranty, you stop thinking about what you can't do and start doing what you never thought possible. Visit your local Kia dealer today to see what you're capable of in a vehicle that inspires confidence around every corner. Kia. Movement that inspires.
Call 800-333-4KIA for details. Always drive safely. Limited inventory available. Warranties include 10-year, 100,000-mile powertrain and 5-year, 60,000-mile basic. Warranties are limited. See retailer for details.